Hello, everyone. My name is Travis.
And I am Ryan.
And welcome to the Wheat in the Chaff. And we are glad that you are listening this day and to this episode, which should be an interesting one. We always hope for entertainment and sometimes to possibly even inform. And we're always mildly amused ourselves when it actually happens. So hopefully you're entertained, possibly informed. But today's topic kind of takes us down some different places, some wandering places, and so settle in for a little bit as we get going.
So, yeah, sometimes we sit here and talk about, like, okay, what are we going to talk about on today's podcast? Because we're not super huge planners. We just come up with this stuff off the top of our heads sometimes. Sometimes we don't. And then there are some times where it's gift wrap for us.
Yes.
It's like, here you go. Here's something you can talk about. So I think today, and we just got done mentioning this, we were actually going to go on a different track, but it's the other track is it relates to this. We're going to talk about this obsession with Christian celebrity in America today, especially amongst American churches. And I'm going to throw out this. I think it's time that the Christian entertainment industry maybe goes away.
But where will Nick Cage make his next movie?
That's a good point.
I mean, if Nicolas Cage can't star in yet another remake of Left Behind, whatever shall we do?
I don't know. We'll probably just be depressed. I have no idea.
Or Kirk Cameron, what would he do for any kind of sustenance after this? If we took away his only form of actual working income. Sorry, Kirk Cameron.
Yes, we love you, Kirk.
Do we?
I don't know.
I
just threw it out there.
I have no interest in Kirk Cameron. Sorry, Kirk.
So the reason I bring this up is a couple of things in the news lately. The first one was President Trump's decision for the new head of his faith-based initiative, whatever you want to call that. I
don't know. Whatever you would call that at this point.
And his choice was prosperity gospel advocate Paula White.
So I'm not quite positive that I can just simply label Paula White a prosperity gospel advocate at this point. She has interesting of lives. She has lived an incredibly interesting path. When I first heard Paula White way back in the day, she was prosperity gospel and always has been, right? Like, I just don't, I mean, maybe she wasn't for some point before, but from the time that I've heard her, she has been primarily prosperity gospel.
Sow your seed of faith.
You turn on Daystar and you're going to see Paula, and you turn on TBN and you're going to see Paula. Speaking of things that should just go away in Christian entertainment industries that should just fold, Daystar and TBN.
Amen to that. I never understood, sidebar, never said when I turn on TBN, when they're talking about, you know, sometimes they have these infomercials about helping the children in Africa, yet they're sitting on a stage with so much gold on it.
Well, do you know, so now we're just going to pause our podcast here for a second to delve deep into some memory lane. I don't know if you remember, I believe it was the early 2000s, 2000 and maybe 99, 2000, somewhere around in there, maybe early 2001.
Okay.
There was the regilding of the TBN studios because they decided to build a replica of the Holy of Holies.
Oh, I think I vaguely remember.
Yeah.
This.
So yes. It was in the same year that Rod Parsley declared a year of Jubilee.
Yes.
And you could send your debts, your loan bills, your invoices, your mortgages, all of these different things. You could send them to Rod, care of TBN. And they burned them on the altar of sacrifice or altar of, I don't know, they had a nice name for the altar, but they burned them. And the idea was that as it was being burned, God would now forgive the debt for you and you would not have that debt anymore.
I would love.
Credit card debt.
I would love to hear the phone conversations when the creditors would actually call these people.
And they'd be like, I burned it on an altar?
No. See, you don't understand. I burned it. Therefore, God will take care of it.
Sir, we'll just send you another bill. No, man, I burned that one. We can send you a copy. You know the debt didn't disappear from the computer. I burned it. Yeah, no, it...
But send me your computer and I'll burn that too.
Yes, TBN has this wonderful history. And this is where, you know, so if you're a long time listener of our podcast in the like 20 episodes that exist,
yeah.
You'll know that neither Ryan or I have deep love for the prosperity gospel, and it's oftentimes the butt of the joke around here.
Yes, it is.
So again, when I first connected to Paula, when I first saw Paula, this was what she was rolling in, and this was how I first heard her and came across her, was like watching and hearing prosperity gospel nonsense being spouted from these, again, Christian entertainment channels. But you know, her journey past that has been one of kind of like a lot of pain, a lot of like trust broken, like a lot of lies. Like there's some serious issues with both Paula, and that's necessarily to say that she's at fault for all of them, but like she's heavily involved in all of them. I mean, I just don't know what to do when you and your pastor husband like split your mega church.
Yeah.
Because you're getting a divorce, and so like you know, who gets to keep the mega church? Like,
yeah,
like, you know, like that. Those are odd.
It belongs to you.
Yeah, like those are odd conversations to have for me. So when Trump named her, you know, kind of his pastor. I mean, again, you think about the legacy, right? You have Billy Graham, who was kind of America's pastor and has mm-hmm. been the spiritual advisor to many different presidents of both
parties.
Yeah, both parties. And frankly, of their own very different faith or non-faith.
He pretty much stayed in the middle. He was pretty
neutral. Right? Like, so it wasn't like, you know, you didn't have to be a high-professing, believing president in order to talk to Billy Graham.
No.
You know, you could kind of just be whatever you were and still consult Billy Graham. And he would offer counsel from the scriptures and he would pray.
Yeah.
You know, and then coming off of Billy Graham, I know like, what was it? We had basically, I think, Rick Warren.
Yeah, Rick Warren did.
You know, Rick Warren, I think, was like for Obama and for a couple of other people. Or
Obama had another guy, and I can't remember his name, but he was like a pastor that Obama knew personally.
Okay,
and I think he was in Florida, and I remember reading about you know his conversation with you know okay. President Obama, just giving him you know how he would president would call him and he'd give him advice and pray for him and this and that. So you know those are good models of like this is how you're supposed to should be doing it.
Yeah, but I mean basically you know kind of people who were quiet, you know, not very confrontational.
No.
You know, good pastoral people.
Didn't seek the spotlight.
Yes, I think that's a great way. Like even Rick Warren, you know, who definitely you could say has you know a mega church background and has definitely been you know the face of a lot of you know kind of the new, a new church planting model, kind of you know coming you know out of that Willow Creek kind of mold. Rick is a really quiet dude.
Yeah, he doesn't seek the spotlight very much.
He really doesn't. And, you know, it's really actually interesting to go and analyze Rick Warren versus the purpose-driven marketing machine that was started around all the purpose-driven stuff. And you come to a real quick realization that those are two very different things,
right?
Like, Rick Warren actually is, he kind of likes to stay low-key. He's mm-hmm. a very, very simple guy. He wrote a couple of really great books because he loves the church and he loves God's people and he wants to see them do well.
Yep.
But then you have Trump as a president and Paula White as his kind of personal spiritual advisor slash pastor. And you have two people who now are kind of the opposite of all of that. They are highly egotistical, highly ambitious, full of just, you know, hyperbole to the point of almost ridiculousness. I like some hyperbole.
Yeah.
But like they take it to levels of just utter nonsense. So again, if you're not familiar, you can go find on Twitter or anywhere online, anywhere where fine Google is served. You can go find the Paula White kind of compilation GIF. I will say it as GIF because it's a hard G. Some might say GIF.
It's totally GIF.
But we all know around here it's
yes,
GIF.
It's GIF.
You can find the compilation of her declaring that, number one, anyone who opposes Trump opposes God. That wherever she stands is holy ground, and therefore when she's in the White House is a holy place of God's dwelling. All sorts of nonsense.
So, yeah, and I'm going to, you know, loop somebody else into this as well, that, you know, Robert Jeffress is another...
Robert Jeffress is another guy we like to have some dialogue about on this
really
podcast.
If you really want to get me fired up, just start talking about Robert Jeffress, and I'll get fired up, because here's how I would describe Robert Jeffress. You know when you... or in school, and there was the little twerp that just wanted to be part of the cool crowd, and he tried so desperately to be part of the cool crowd, but, you know, never could fit in, but, you know, tried to suck up to everybody so he could be part of the cool crowd. Well, now that little twerp has found his guy that would actually tolerate him. And so Robert Jeffress, he's done the same thing as Paula White, saying that, you know, especially with, like, this impeachment process going on, you know, they're trying to get this impeachment process going with President Trump, saying, if President Trump is impeached, this is basically, and I'm going to paraphrase what he said, an impeachment of our Christian faith and Christian values. And I'm like, wait a minute, when has our Christian faith ever been associated with a political leader?
Constantinople.
Yep. And that was probably not the greatest thing ever.
Probably started our doom spiral from there. Yeah.
So there's this draw, and I've been observing this, where this culture of Christian celebrity associated with, and I don't think everybody in the Christian entertainment industry is like this, but I think what we're seeing is, it may be God's way of saying, guys, we may need to back off on this. We may need to pump the brakes. We may need to just get rid of this altogether, because now you have, like, recently we were just talking about this, John Crist, the Christian comedian, who's been accused of some inappropriate behavior towards women. And you've been seeing this a lot with, like, mega church pastors being accused of, like, bullying and being accused.
Bill Hybels. Well, I mean, a flagship pastor for most evangelicalism.
Rick Warren and Bill Hybels. Those
were the two guys. And they were kind of the two sides of the same coin, right? They were both, you know, highly forefront evangelical pastors. One probably a little bit more traditional and conservative. The other one, you know, willing to get a little bit more out there and do stuff that was, you know, a little more modern. But basically, you know, they were the guys that you looked to and said, here's kind of the new movement of the church.
Yeah.
You know, from about, like, the mid-80s on was Willow Creek and Warren's church, which I'm now forgetting.
Saddleback,
thank you. I find the Christian celebrity thing to always be a tension-filled kind of conversation, because on one hand, we look at Christian music. And I remember growing up in a time and in a place where, you know, if you didn't listen to Christian music, you were listening to the devil's music, right? Like, it was...
But the devil's music sounded so good.
It really did. You know, he knows how to play his guitar riffs. Let's just put it like that.
I miss my Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, dang. Those are good times. They're back together, you know. Yes. Without Darcy, though. Which, I know, it's not the same without Darcy. But anyway...
We digress.
We do digress. It might be one of those podcast episodes where we digress quite a bit.
Yep.
Settle in. But yeah, it's the Christian entertainment industry has this up and down where, like, when you think of Christian music, I remember when Christian music was, hey, not that I was there personally for this because it's a little before my time, but having studied the history of it, you know, you had coming kind of out of the gospel hymn movement of, like, the Gaither era of the 60s and early 70s. Right, this idea of church music, you know, which was very, like, you know, bum, bum, ba, do, dum, 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 you know, that kind of, like, you know, good gospel Gaithery sounds.
Yes.
You know, you had these churches filled with Jesus people, also coming out of the 60s and the early 70s, who just wanted to sit around and strum a guitar and, like, say the same sentence over and over and over again. And the idea being the focus was just Jesus, and the focus was something, you know, really simple and corporate that everybody could connect to. And of course, you know, those people start to get a little bit older and they start to join more established churches, and, you know, those churches kind of have that clash of, like, you know, but we're organ people and he's bringing in a guitar and the bass and the drums, right? And so, you know, you had that kind of culture shift and to some degree a culture war, and out of it becomes artists. Keith Green is someone who I think of, you know, from the 70s,
yep,
who really pioneered what it meant to be a Christian, trying to write songs about your faith that would encourage, affirm, and lift up other believers, which is different than just simply being a Christian writing good music that people want to listen to, right? Like, he had a very specific goal. He wanted to write music that spoke to believers in these various walks of life and lifted them up and encouraged them and affirmed them and gave them hope for their faith journey. And of course, once you get enough artists doing that, you get someone who goes, hey, we should start a label that does this, right? And out of this label, we're going to need to get more artists. And it's going to be just this kind of in-house thing. And even churches then started doing it for their worship music, right? Like churches would then bring on songwriters. Big mega churches would oftentimes bring on songwriters who would write songs specifically for that church that they would then produce, and then they would sell. And so suddenly, you know, out of these, again, you know, kind of simple times, you had Maranatha music spraying up, and then you have Hosanna music spraying up, and then Vineyard music spraying up, and Hillsong music spraying up, and, you know, you name it, and all these, and now you have Elevation and Bethel, and you almost have this culture where once your church reaches a certain size, why aren't you hiring songwriters and musicians to basically perform your new church's brand of music, right? And the problem that we run into, and so it's a again, two sides of the same coin thing. On one hand, gives musicians, songwriters who are people of faith a place to communicate and express that part that frankly would never go over in, like, say, your local pub. Right, like, I'm not going to go over to my local pub and be like, "Hey guys, let's join me in a rousing chorus of Shout to the Lord." It's just never going to happen.
Sing of your love.
We could bring Darlene in and have her sway, and she would still not be able to move that crowd because it's just simply not the environment where people are looking to experience God in that way. But you can go to almost any conference. You can still go to a conference, and actually, it's at the point now where if you go to a conference and sing Shout to the Lord, people would be like, dude, it's a retro song.
Yes, I know.
They've gone vintage. But with that kind of high production, and with the high production comes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And with the lot of money comes a certain level of quality and a certain expectation of who these people are now going to be. And with those expectations of money and quality and status comes celebrity. And you suddenly have, like, oh, this person is the person we go to for this. You have Matt Redman and you have Chris Tomlin, both good brothers. Like, nothing against Matt Redman or Chris Tomlin. Nope. But there was a period where you did not, like, CCLI did a study on this and found that there was a period where there was not a Sunday that went by from all of the churches that were, like, in their deal where at least a Chris Tomlin or Matt Redman song weren't sung.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you have to sit there and be like, on one hand, you know, kudos to Chris Tomlin and Matt Redman for getting to do what they are gifted and called to do, and
sure,
you know, all the best to them. At the same time, it tells you something about the marketing machine of the Christian music industry that fuels our appetite for that kind of stuff. And that's where I worry about the ego that comes into play. I worry about the fact that when you start becoming that forefront person, there is a ton of pressure. Number one, to continue performing at that high level, but also there's a lot of ego because you start walking out and there's thousands of people chanting your name.
Yeah, it's a tough place to be. I think it's so much pressure to put on somebody. So now you got, like, Kanye West,
right?
Kanye West, who claims to be a Christian now, and from what I've read about him and I've listened to his album, and it sounds pretty legit.
And yeah, I actually enjoy it, and I have a love hate with Kanye for years. I mean, so it's like Jesus is King is not my first Kanye album. Let's just go ahead and say it like that. There's a lot of Kanye music where I go, dude, sweet, and then there's a lot where I go, no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So you know, for people who are trying, you know, like, kind of jump on the Kanye bandwagon or try to get off it that we're never on it, it's like, you know, go do some listening to a lot of different stuff, but. He is a kind of person where Kanye and humility don't necessarily go hand in hand.
No.
And so you wonder, like, okay, what is this going to look like for someone like him?
But here's my other concern with that, too. Mm. For somebody who has had issues with ego in the past, and that's been clear. It's not like we're judging him. It's been very clear. And I think he admits it, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And but here's my other concern. Is Christians are so desperate to have, because we feel like the Christian America is slipping away. We can debate that on whether America was ever actually Christian or not. Yep. We feel it slipping away, so we're desperate to grasp at anything that will put us at the forefront as a valid voice once again. And when Kanye comes out, or even before him, Justin Bieber said he was a Christian. And we just jumped mm-hmm. all over that. And we clung to him and said, yes, President Trump gets in the office and claims he's a Christian. And, you know, Paula White's there and Robert Jeffress is there and, you know, all this stuff. And we're desperate to cling on to this. But it's like, I think God may be saying, you know what? That's not what we're supposed to be about. I think it may be time where we just say, you know what? We're done with the celebrity culture. We're done with the Christian celebrity culture. Let's get back to a grassroots movement where we start building relationships with people, sharing the good news, showing love to people, not putting all our hope in some singer-songwriter
yeah.
or some politician or some other celebrity who claims they know Jesus and are followers of Jesus and things like that. Because, you know, we've seen it done with other celebrities like Chris Pratt, you know, Star-Lord,
yep,
all these things. He said he's a Christian. So we jump on, oh, Chris Pratt. And, you know, there's tons. You know, on Sunday, there were tons of pastors who mentioned Kanye.
Yeah.
There's tons. You know they did.
Yep.
And that's a lot of pressure to put on one guy, especially a guy who struggled with ego in the past.
Yeah.
To put that kind of pressure on him to say, you are a great, you're the great next hope that we have, you know. Help us, Obi-Wan Kanye.
Obi-Wan Conway, Kanye.
You're our only hope.
So, I mean, I guess my question for this, you know, kind of thinking this through, can Christianity thrive if it's the minority?
I think in the
past, American Christianity. So I think this is gonna be our shifting point right here, right? Yes, like this is our shifting space.
We have to quantify this,
yeah, because this is our. I feel like we're at that kind of tipping point where it's a fair enough question to ask. If Christianity becomes just another minority faith, and Christians become a minority subculture, can it still thrive? Because I don't think we're used to that. I think for most Christians, I don't think that they're used to being a minority voice. I think that they think that they are a minority voice. Yeah. And so they look at stuff like, you know, there's no Bible in my school as a form of oppression. Yeah. And one can sit there and say, okay, there is a spiritual, you know, war that gets raged, and it gets waged oftentimes on a social level. But ultimately, is it really the same to say that, quote unquote, they don't allow prayer in school is really the same as the persecution, say, of the underground church in China.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, in other words, we have this kind of victim minority complex without actually being victims and minorities.
So I liken it like this, and I've been praying this for a while. I've been praying, saying, God, you know, I want you to, if you have to tear it down to build it back up, do that to raise up your true church. So to get to your question, I'm going to liken American Christianity to a Rubik's Cube. My son Shepard got a Rubik's Cube for his birthday, and we actually just solved it yesterday watching a YouTube video. We're not that smart to do it on our own. Shepard might be, but I'm not. So I did watch a YouTube video. But anyway, so American Christianity was this completed Rubik's Cube for years and years and years. But slowly, things got out of whack,
mm-hmm.
and out of whack, and out of whack, and out of whack. And pretty soon, it's all mixed up. And what do you do if a Rubik's Cube's all mixed up? Well, you got to start somewhere. You got to start at the beginning. You know, if you're trying to solve it, let's say you're trying to solve a Rubik's Cube, you almost mm-hmm. got it, but you just keep mm-hmm. messing it up. And what do you do? Well, let's just start over, and we'll start back over. That's what we did with this Rubik's Cube of his. We'd watch the video, we'd get so far, and then we're like, oh, it's not working. All right, let's just start. Shepard would be like, just start the video
just start over. Yep.
So I think what God is going to do, and I think what God may be trying to do, to answer your question, can American Christianity thrive as a minority? No. And I think it might be time for American Christianity to die so that true Christianity can raise up out of its ashes, you know, if that makes sense. And I'm not trying to say that all American Christians are terrible, terrible nope. people, because we're not. We're Americans and we love America. But I'm saying the form of Christianity known as American Christianity.
Okay, but then this leads to the next question, which is when that form of Christianity runs its course and passes, and this, you know, kind of new, let's say, quote unquote, authentic slash primitive Christianity emerges. If it emerges, if it's emerging right now in the voice of Kanye West, Justin Bieber as he connects to Hillsong. You know, a lot of these people who, frankly, most traditional American evangelical Christians would be like, oh, they aren't Christian because they do X, Y, and Z. Or they sing the kind of music that I don't listen to. Mm-hmm. Or they wear the brands of clothes that I don't wear. So this is where, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's an interesting thing, right? Because with that shift comes if it rebuilds, you have to basically, you lose a lot of the stuff that currently exists, and you might lose a lot of the people who currently exist in that form, right? So it's gonna be an interesting process. I don't know. I'm torn. I am completely convinced that Christian celebrity culture is probably something that needs to end sooner rather than later.
Yes.
I feel like if you are, and again, this is not to say, like, if you're gifted, like, be excellent at your craft, do your Absolutely. Job well, do it to and for the glory of God. But that is different than, you know, I want to be able to have 1,000 people sing my name. And frankly, again, because the pressure to do that is high, the results when that happens are usually, there's a reason why we look at Billy Graham and go, what a great story. And it's because, frankly, he is one of the few people who just doesn't have a chink in the armor, so to speak. He doesn't have, there's just nobody who's ever come out and been like, oh, Billy Graham did this thing once, right? Like, he has walked a very straightforward path. And there are plenty of non-named, unknown people who have also walked completely whole, righteous, wonderful paths. But the bigger you get, the easier it is for this kind of stuff to take you apart, you know. And I think that's even the problem that I run into with, you know, and we've talked about this before, the prosperity gospel with Paula White, with that kind of thinking, is it is based on, I need to become someone huge and important and big. Otherwise, I'm not living in God's blessing, I'm not living in God's favor, and I'm not really, truly experiencing God's best for me.
Yeah.
And I would just, again, point to the scriptures of, like, you know, when Jesus prayed his prayer in the garden, I mean, he was very clear, like, out of all of these kind of things that are going on in the world, of all the things that people reach for, hope for, have ambition and ego for, the one thing he's like, if you're following me, you shouldn't be like this, right? This shouldn't be the way you're known, right? It shouldn't be known as a, you know, an egotistical, you know, celebrity campaign. And again, I think that you have an interesting life of the church. If you go in and do some early church history, you have an interesting, powerful, miraculous life of the church, supernatural, spirit-filled life of the church. And then you have Constantinople, and you have an emperor who decides to make Christianity a state religion, and you have faith meeting power.
Yes.
And when faith meets power, power tends to be what wins.
Yes, usually.
Like, there's not a lot of people who maintain their faith while also maintaining their power. Again, scripture highlights a few. You get the Josephs, mm-hmm. who are able to maintain their relationship with God while wielding great power in their city state. You have the Daniels who get to do the same. But not a lot of them.
Not a lot.
I mean, Look at David. Look at Solomon. Look at, like, if we go scripture, like, if we look at that, and then, of course, if we look into history, once especially you get past Constantinople, it is more often than not that the people who are in power have very little connection to their faith. And that's where I feel like the celebrity culture of today, it's just becoming a modernized repetition of the past, which is we end up with people who are incredibly influential, whose faith is incredibly shallow.
Yes.
And Jesus would basically say that's not how we're supposed to be.
And so, I think that's what I'm talking, how I'm describing American Christianity. I'm describing mm-hmm. those negative aspects where we're seeking power. And, you know, you see, like, there's groups that make these public statements about certain things and against certain things, mm-hmm. and they have to make it public. And it's like, why is there such a desire to make things so public when you know there's going to be pushback, there's going to be negative perceptions and things like that? Why can't we just get back to, hey, be the church in your particular area? Be a light in your particular area. If you're called to go into politics, be the light of Christ in politics. Mm-hmm. If you're called to, you know, do just be in your local area and work in your local area, well, be a light for Christ there. If your church is meant to just be a small little church in this town, well, then be a light for Christ as the mm-hmm. best you can. why are we, I think it's, when I say American Christianity is time to die, I say the American Christianity that strives and just yells and screams to have this voice again on such a public mm-hmm. stage, where it's like, you know what? Because, I mean, you want to see how Christians act when they're given a public voice? Go on Twitter.
Right. And social media is a great indicator of what happens.
See what you find. You find 9 times out of 10 that the Christians on there are not the most pleasant people to listen to.
It can be a Jekyll and Hyde experience.
It can be a very Jekyll and Hyde experience.
Well, we're going to wrap this one up for today. We would love to hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts on Christian celebrities? What are your thoughts on the Christian entertainment industry? Do you love Kirk Cameron? And can you wait to see the new Nicolas Cage movie in Left Behind again? The re-rapturing. So we would love to hear back from you. Leave us a comment, drop us a line, and we will talk to you soon. Take it easy.
See ya.